You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, right here in the absolutely amazing, wonderful Cocoa, Florida. What a great day we're having today. Our show is heard worldwide here on WWBC on AM 1510, FM 94.7, 99.9, and 100.7, Miss Ellen. And I am so happy to have our show today. It's two old friends.
It is. It's just like our living room, right? Mm-hmm. At the 1510wwbc.com. You can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. And then, of course, we share all of that information on our website, which is cedamediainc.com, and then all of our social media pages as well. All have new pictures today and all sorts of new things. So everything was updated over the weekend. So enjoy, everybody. You can download from all of those spots.
That's right. So for our listeners who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends for the first time, we're heating up the airwaves today with what we like to call kitchen table topics. We actually sit down here on Mondays and speak to people right here in our state, around the nation, globally. Our show is, of course, heard everywhere. And we talk about topics that are near and dear to people, whether it's writing a book, buying a book, telling a story, talking about financial literacy, having debts with your credit card. Maybe you want to talk about a quality education for every child. Sometimes people call in to speak about the housing market, the stock market, whatever it is. If you have a nonprofit, we've had folks that call in to talk about their nonprofit and all the great things they're doing here in Brevard to clean up our beaches, teach children to read, to stop the exploitation of the elderly. We've talked to people who do projects here to stop bullying, like the Zonta Club and all that. And I have great sponsors who helps us with those shows. And of course, Ellen, today's no different. We've got a good friend, Siobhan Scott, who is on the telephone, and she's, I like to say telephone. People don't say telephone anymore. They just say phone. Her book is bringing me back to the 60s and 50s and all that. And so Siobhan Scott is a highly respected psychotherapist and an accomplished author of multiple books, and she is a survivor. Let me tell you, I read her book, Nightbird. It was a quick read, a good read. I couldn't put it down. For me to leave an event early and stop dancing and go home just to curl up with my book and finish the last few chapters, that's huge. That's what I did Saturday. I left and I went back to finish my book. And then our second segment, we have Dr. Aisha Thomas, my Caribbean sister. She's an MD and a specialist in infectious diseases, health and wellness. And she's going to be calling to talk about her medical practice and wellness and all the great things she does in Vero Beach and Sebastian and here in Melbourne, too. Mm-hmm. So, Dr. Siobhan Scott, talk to us about yourself. And I swear to you, you've called in quite a few times on the show, and now I feel like I know you even better because I read the book. So give our listeners a little insight about yourself and what you do as a psychotherapist.
Sure. I have been a therapist, I say over 30 years, and it's actually getting closer to 40 years at this point, which is a really scary thing to say.
Yeah.
But I'm passionate about helping people and understanding the world. And when you learn about my history, you can kind of get a sense for why that is, you know, why I want to understand people and why I'm so driven to help people improve their lives. But I've worked in private practice, meaning seen my own clients throughout that time. But I've also worked in various agencies, including forensic programs with criminals, domestic violence programs with survivors, rape crisis centers, working with the police department as a crisis intervention specialist. So I've done a wide variety of things, and I'm just at a phase in my life where I want to share about it because I think I've learned a lot of lessons.
You have. And, you know, I just finished Nightbird, and what a powerful memoir. And you wrote it in such simple language that anyone could understand that book and understand why, you know, you chose the profession that you did. And you focused, and your book actually is focused on so many things that are happening today in our world with domestic violence and gun violence and education and women getting pregnant and having to get married and no sexual education. First to begin with, Siobhan Scott, thank God you're still alive.
I'm very, very grateful. I am very grateful. I think as the book goes through the marriage to the violent husband, he took his own life, but he very easily could have taken mine too. And so every day I'm grateful for the life that I've been fortunate enough to be blessed in so many ways and rebuild it. And I think that's one of the themes that I also use over and over with my clients is this idea of it doesn't matter what your past is, let's look at reauthoring it and how do you change the present and look toward a better future. And that's always been my focus. I'm kind of a driven person and always wanted to, you know, to move beyond the family trauma, move beyond the domestic violence, and how do I recreate myself and create a good life?
Yeah, and you know, as I read your book, you know, of course, Ellen O'Neill is here, my co-host who's been with us forever, and Allie is sitting here with us, and she's also listening. Allie's a friend of the show, and she comes every Monday. And they're both riveted by, you know, what I told them about the book. But, you know, now I understand. I love your Facebook post, and it's always a message. And now I can see the messenger behind the messages. Mm-hmm. And, you know, your book, Nightbird, and you are a psychotherapist. And for you to fall into the hands and the clutches of Robert, help me to understand, because as I read the book, and by the way, whoever advised you to write the book in short chapters, I love them. Mm-hmm. I just love whoever gave you that idea, because it makes the reader want to keep going, like quickly. Oh, you know, it's just perfect. But there were so many red flags with Robert. There were a lot of red flags. And here you are, a mother of three. Mm-hmm. And you left, I mean, and you had to leave Greg as well. There was a lot of religious extremism and things with him. Either way, sadly, you're in bad shape with these men. So the red flags, didn't you see any of them?
You know, this was a strange thing. On one hand, I could see them, but I was very young. I was just starting grad school to become a therapist. And everything that we were taught, this was back in the 80s, was that everybody can be fixed and that everybody's symptoms are because they've had a bad childhood. And that therapy, if you can just get them in the right therapy, anybody could be fixed. And like most abusers, Robert had a wonderful side. And there was the honeymoon phase and the seduction and the love bombing and all these things that, you know, we're understanding more in pop culture now about how these relationships work. But I didn't understand any of that. And so when I got the good side of him, I would tell myself, well, this is the real him. And when I got the angry, rageful side of him, which happened regularly, I looked at it as a problem that I could help fix. And therapy was going to fix it. And in truth, we know better than that. There are people with these very, you know, problematic, they're called the dark triad or dark tetrad personality types. And therapy doesn't fix them. It doesn't impact it at all. And in fact, when they go to therapy, they use it as another tool of manipulation. So there was a lot of that going on. And then the other piece was I was incredibly naive because I had missed the developmental phase of dating. And I was raised in this really strict punitive religion, which taught me that self-sacrifice was a virtue and my own happiness. That wasn't important. It was important to try to save people. And that came out of my own history, which is why I put that in the book. And so I was really kind of a sitting duck. I was a naive young woman in her mid-20s. And I had a lot of mistaken beliefs and just didn't understand the red flags.
Yes.
Looking back now, they're very clear. But I've come a long way since those days.
Yeah, you had a lot of challenges with him. And one of the things that he did, which reminded me of why I left my children's father after 7 years, and now I'm happily married for 35 years, was that after that phase of the emotional outburst, now you were lucky he never hit you. And he thought, even though he was verbally abusive and throwing things, he would say to you, well, I never hit you. But
right. But
there was a lot of abuse. And then he would cook and like nothing happened and expect you to eat it. And there goes, life.
Yeah. And for the survivor of that, you compartmentalize, you dissociate, and you try to carry on as if things are normal. And he would always say, I never hit you. But he did things like shove, push, knock me down, restrain me from leaving. I could be standing next to a wall and he would punch the wall and get in my face and scream. So now I can look back at that and say, that's all abuse. But at the time, I simply didn't recognize it. And when he said, I never hit you, I'm like, well, that's true. He has not hit me. But he knew how to push it to the limit. And he would use rage to intimidate and control, which, as we know, that's what abusers do.
Yeah, he was very charming and very abusive. And he caused a lot of fear in your life. One of his redeeming qualities, I thought, this Robert guy, in front of your children, there was not a lot of commotion.
No. They would see him angry at times, but he would tone it down as far as directing it at me, and he never directed it at them. But he would get easily frustrated, and, one time the TV wasn't working, so he punched it, kicked it, and broke it. And the kids would see things like that, which was terrible role modeling. But they referred to it as he's throwing a tantrum. He's having tantrums. And, of course, I look back on that now and regret that my kids were ever exposed to any of that. But fortunately, they've all turned out to be wonderful people, and they're all middle-aged now and have happy marriages. And, I can say that I'm very proud of them.
Yeah, and I think a lot of what happened to you, too, which happens to a lot of people, you really had a dysfunctional childhood where both parents were absent from your life.
Yes.
The person who spent a lot of time with you was your grandmother. Superly, overly religious too. And a lot of those ideas, which they try, the thing with the praying all the time and pray everything away. In real life, you cannot pray everything away, even though I believe in prayer and I believe in our creator. And I understand the calmness that prayer brings. It seems as though a lot of that in your life affected how you lived with Robert and Greg.
Right, because suffering was a virtue. And early marriage was something that was common. My mother had been raped by a man 20 years older than her and got pregnant at 13, had her first baby at 14. And, my grandmother, I believe, had been married by 15, and I married at 16, and I had cousins that married at 16. So a lot of the punitive, I call it was a very harsh religious background. It really, women were there to serve and to sacrifice themselves and tolerate abuse. And that was just part of the transgenerational pattern in the family. And so that affected me tremendously. And that was something I really wanted to change, that pattern with the way my kids were raised. And fortunately, that has, you know, been borne out, that they have taken very, very different paths in life, which I'm forever grateful for.
Yeah. And it seems as though the recurring theme in your book with the abuse, the extremism with religion, the male patriarch, you know, family members, mm-hmm. The man having the final say with everything. I mean, you're getting married at 15. Mm-hmm. It looks like right now in our country, some women and some men as well, we feel as though that's happening in today's world as
Very
well,
much.
With women being taken backwards.
Very much, very much. The whole movement online about pushing women back into traditional wives, they call them trad wives roles. And there's a whole population of men, a lot of them active on the internet. We call it the manosphere. And they believe women should not vote, that there should be one vote for a household and that should be made by the man. It's horrifying to read this. And I think most of us who grew up during the women's movement never thought we would be seeing things to this extreme. I mean, there's always been misogyny and the patriarchy and men who didn't like outspoken women. But to see it this flagrant in the younger generation, it's really horrifying, losing reproductive, you know, freedom. I feel like we're almost moving back into my mother's time, a time of tremendous repression for women.
Yeah, and one of the recurring themes in your book as well is the abuse of power, the manipulative mm-hmm. Behavior of Robert and Greg, and your father as well. He was a bit of a bully with your mom.
Yeah, yeah.
She really had to learn how to budget. I kind of saw her like in front of me as I'm reading the book, and I'm thinking, this poor woman, you know, she kept it together for you all, but inside of her, her body was raging with shame and guilt and
very much
the bullying that she had to take, not just from her dad, but from her husband as well.
Yeah, yeah. My father really believed women were inferior. He had three terms for women that I recall him using throughout my childhood: stupid bitch, dumb broad, or old heifer. And this is how he talked about women. And he did not allow my mother to make any decisions. And she never defied him. One occasion, she told me the story, she had defied him on something and went ahead and did something that he did not approve of. And he did punch her in the face and knock her to the ground. And she never defied him again. But she carried so much trauma in her system. She died of cancer at 50 and just had a sad, sad, tragic life. It makes me tear up now when I look back at the story of her life. To me, that is just incredibly sad.
Right. And your aunts, you had family members who also had, I guess it makes sense why you became a psychotherapist, because you saw a lot of the family members that also had issues, but they went undiagnosed and they were outcasted from the family because no one really knew how to care for them. And one of the ladies, I forgot her name, she went on, one of your cousins, they went on to have so many babies with different people and nobody knew where she was.
Yeah, that my aunt with schizophrenia stayed with us during when her symptoms would get very bad. She lived in Kansas, we lived in California. But when she really got to a point where she was hallucinating and could not care for herself or her children, she would come out and stay with us. But my family never understood it was mental illness. They thought the word for her, they called her ornery. She was ornery Ida, and that she was just volitionally being difficult. And she was eventually diagnosed with schizophrenia, but it had it for decades and never been diagnosed. And she spent her later years in an institution for the mentally ill. And she had, I can't remember if it was 10 or 11 children. It's in my book. And it was interesting. She had them at home. And I believe it was 5 girls that survived. All the others were male infants, and they did not survive. And that seems a bit suspect when I look back at that on this point. All the girls survived. The boys didn't. And there were there was another case of an aunt that we could put it in the category of infanticide. So a lot of mental illness in the family, particularly on my mother's side. And that, again, tragically, was not understood and was not treated, because in these days and times, if people are lucky enough to have family that get them into treatment, people can get on medication and live, you know, fairly functional lives. Sometimes they live very well. But that, again, was just ignorance. And there are, of course, still families that are ignorant about mental illness, but it's certainly not as bad as it was in the 60s.
Yeah, I mean, for our listeners who are tuning in, we just want to tell you that I'm speaking with psychotherapist and my good friend Siobhan Scott, who's an author, and whose life's work bridges trauma recovery, and her book is all about the power of healing. Nightbird weaves a story of loss and renewal and transformation and all the insights you've gained as a clinician too. So, you know, going back to the book, you had to have 2 and 3 jobs so that the family could survive. And Robert worked as a musician, and then he worked with the lawn company. I read the part when he broke his own guitar, and that was rage. And I felt sorry for you for that. And I'm like, here you are in the middle of a storm, driving a patient who was in crisis, and you're driving through this winding road. And as I read the book, I'm watching you drive. Tell our listeners a little bit about that job that you took, because you had the experience, you could take that job, working in conjunction with law enforcement to get that patient to the hospital. At one point, I thought the patient was going to either murder you or hurt you, and I kept waiting to see if you would get to the emergency room safely. So talk to us about that job and why you took that job.
Yeah. I was always, and Robert, really, it wasn't even a lawn company. He was called the budget gardener, and he would mow a few lawns and then hang out at the record store. And so this was one of the areas of contention in our marriage, is he just wouldn't work. And so I had my private practice in the daytime. And then at night, I worked 3 12-hour shifts a week with the mobile crisis agency, which meant I would go out in a big van, like an institutional van that had the kind of the wire cage in the back so the person couldn't get to the driver. But I would go out alone, and I had a pager, and I would take calls for someone having a mental health emergency. And that could mean anything from perched on the roof and threatening to jump off, to running naked down the city street, people hallucinating, threatening other people. And it was very exciting work. And on one hand, I love the fact that you had to think fast, you had to diagnose fast, you had to problem solve. So it was very intellectually challenging. But working the night shift was quite scary. And there were people who were hallucinating, you know, that I was a vampire coming to kill them. And that's the one you were talking about, where I had her in the back of the van, and she was threatening and kicking my seat, and had to go 3 miles down a mountain in the middle of the night in a rainstorm. And that's an episode I will never forget.
Yeah, I wouldn't either, because I was right there with you in that van. I'm sitting in his van, just make sure she gets there safely. And my friend is like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm driving.
Okay,
so we only have like 6 minutes left of the segment, and I so tell our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, When you walked in that day after a long day's work and you couldn't find him, and then you found him and he was he was gone. It was a suicide, but the way he did it, it was almost like he wanted to hurt you.
It
was a revenge suicide because, and then he left you a poster telling you where to find his body. You know, I pray for you, and I'm so grateful that you're alive with us to tell the story so that other women who see the red flags and the warning signs would just walk away. Because you couldn't. You live to tell the tale to us. So tell our listeners about that scene. And then you decided to write this book after you were in that pool and you had to survive.
Yeah, it was a horrifying scene, and the book opens with it because it was obviously one of the pivotal points of my life. I had told him that day I wanted a divorce because I was sick of the anger, and I had just been growing stronger and stronger, had a good therapist myself, and I was done. And I let him know calmly, I don't want to fight. I don't want any drama. I am done, and I want out of the marriage. And he responded calmly, but I think he knew I was serious. So I went off to work that day. I came home after dark, and I expected to find him angry, you know, because that was just what he did. But I went into that dark house, and it was struck me as very odd because usually the lights would be on and the porch light would be on. And I didn't see the sign because he had left it on the front door. And I went in through the garage door that night. And it was dark. I called out to him. I heard no noise, no music. Everything was eerie. And I began walking through the house looking for him in the dark. And then eventually walked into the dining room, and he was hanging. He had hanged himself in the dining room and had a spotlight shining on his body. And later on, when the police came, they found the poster. It was a big poster on the door saying, "I'm waiting for you in the dining room." So it was what we now call a revenge suicide. And that's poorly understood because we always think of people who suicide as depressed. And about 50% of the time, they are. That's what drives suicide. And those are the people we want to help. We get them into treatment. But another category of folks have a terminal illness, and they're making a very conscious decision that and it's a lot of people that they're done. You know, they've got terminal cancer and they just don't want to go through it anymore. And that's in a totally different category. I think we can say that's rational. There's another group of people who are psychotic. They don't know what they're doing. They think they're going to come back as God, or they jump out a window thinking they can fly. And so these are people who are clearly mentally ill, and we want to get them in treatment too. But the final category are the people who do it out of rage, and it's usually men, and I discuss some of those cases in my book. And they're angry at the wife. They shoot themselves in front of her. Often they shoot her and then shoot themselves. And sometimes they shoot the kids and the whole family. And this is a different kind of person. And so these types of suicide all get conflated together. And in truth, they're very distinctly different acts.
Yeah. Well, your memoir is powerful, Siobhan. And, you know, generational trauma, if not addressed, it goes right into the present day. How do we help other people that in our family setting and our family and friends that, you know, I mean, for example, people come here as immigrants, right? And, you know, with one chicken, you got to split it six ways, like I wrote in my book. But when I tell my children of my trials and tribulation and challenges, it's not that I want them to buy one chicken and split it into six meals, but I want them to understand that I came to the United States as a, you know, and I was very poor, and I had to clean homes and use three buses to make $20. And I want to tell them my story without hurting them. But there are some families where the trauma is different, and the children see the bullying and the religious bullying and all that. How do you help people that you know are going through that? And how does someone contact somebody such as yourself? This is a good time to give the website so that we could break that generational trauma.
Yeah, I think the first thing that people can do that's very, very powerful is admit to themselves that they're being hurt, that something is wounding and difficult in their lives, no fault of their own. And they need to talk about it, and they need to not keep it secret, because so often people feel shame about these things, and they hide, you know, and they internalize it. And so even finding, you know, there's the National Domestic Violence Hotline, which I don't have written down in front of me, but if you Google it, it's 24/7, and you can even text. But that's such a powerful resource just to do that. People can call their local domestic violence programs. Every community has got something locally. You should be able to Google that. but I think, first of all, feeling like you have a social support network, people that care about you, that you can talk to, and that's the place to start, because then you grow stronger and you can start finding resources in a community. And everybody needs resources.
And there's always #988 from any phone.
Yeah.
And that's a crisis line as well.
Well, Siobhan, your story weaves, you know, a story of your transformation, the insight you gain as a clinician. And your book is so honest, and it gives a lot of hope to everyone who wants to read it and can hear about it. You also just won an award for that book, too. And I hope it's made into a movie. It feels to me like that book can be made into a movie very easily, because it's got all the elements that are happening in today's society that people need to pay attention to.
It would definitely be a movie I would watch. People have mistaken the book on some occasions and written a review saying this was such a thrilling novel. Well, it's not a novel, it's a memoir, but people think it's fiction. And so, yes, I think if it ever got any kind of real attention, it's from a small press, a small publisher, so there's no budget for advertising or anything like that. But if it ever got attention, it would be a movie I would go watch.
I would watch it, too, because I would learn from it, and I could tell other people how to protect themselves, you know, from all this emotional trauma, too. But give us your website, because our segment is coming to an end. And I can't tell you how much I love your book. And I'm going to give it to my friend Sharon to read, and then we'll pass it on to different people. And another friend is buying one for herself. So thank you for sharing your story with us and helping us, sadly, through your trauma.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for reading. The my website is just my name, SHAVAUNSCOTT, SiobhanScott.com. And I have information about all my books, a lot of interviews, articles, and I try to keep it updated with new stuff. But I also have a Substack, which I have a lot of articles. I put one a week on Substack. And that is also, you could probably find it just by Substack inserting my name.
Yep,
but
and just
the title of it is Spotlight on Psychology on Substack.
All very easily navigatable and findable, because I just looked everything up, and I've shared all of that on our website as well as our social media pages as the download comes out. That'll be available this week. And we are going to listen to our sponsors really quickly with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and we'll be right back right after these messages.
Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9. That's Cloud9Furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture.
Join BABA Senior Outreach for our annual Senior Support Walk and Vendor Fair. We're gathering at Wickham Park on May 23rd. from 8 to noon to celebrate our seniors one step at a time. We are honored to welcome our featured guest speaker, Dr. Visa Svensson, Medical Director of Health First Aging Services, who will be sharing her expertise on senior wellness. From fresh food and light housekeeping to our Adopt-a-Senior and Companionship Program, we provide essential support for Brevard County adults age 60 and older. Come out for their giveaways, visit our senior vendors, and enter your chance to win a $500 cash prize. Your presence helps us do even more. Visit babaseniouroutreach.org to learn more, and we'll see you May 23rd from 8 to noon.
Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000 or visit them on the web at DixieCrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And we are back on air and online everywhere in the world on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We're heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere. And I am going to hurry up this because I have a guest on the phone who is a good friend of mine. And I thank God that I just saw you at BIMDA, Dr. Aisha Thomas, my Caribbean sister, and thank you for taking the time from your busy practice this morning to call in and speak with us about health and wellness, eating right, exercising, dieting, and just enjoying God's magnificent planet. So take it away. Tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and what I mean, you've written a book, all the great things you're doing.
Oh, Sita, it's amazing to be here again because it's my second time and I really appreciate the opportunity. So a little about me. I'm board certified internal medicine physician, specialized in infectious diseases, and also I'm board certified in lifestyle medicine and also aesthetics. So I do a few things, and my passion is really health and wellness. I did do allopathic medicine. As you know, you go through the track where I recall so many drug reps coming in and saying, this is the best new drug and this is the other drug. And we learn all these studies. And then I see patients coming in and then the follow-up, there's side effects, there's issues, there's concerns. And so it made me, you know, think that, you know, healing is within ourselves. God put that in us when we were created. And I think that if we can tap into learning about our bodies, how they should function, about, you know, just general health, we would be better off. And that's where lifestyle medicine comes in. Because in that specialty, we use six pillars, which are basic ways of living, such as how you eat, plant-based nutrition, healthy sleep, social connections, avoiding risky substances, movement as medicine, and so on. And that keeps us on a track of health and longevity.
Right. So you are transforming bodies and transforming lives. And I don't know, for some reason, every time I speak with you and you talk about life and healthy living and lifestyle, I think about the Caribbean and I think of one plant, the aloe. You know, like,
oh, that's a good one. That is such a good one. I was talking to a good friend yesterday and we were just reminiscing about how there are so many natural remedies that are found in the plants and herbs. And honestly, Big Pharma goes around the world where they study small communities and they find hidden knowledge that they translate by taking the compounds from the plants and making them into drugs.
Yeah, and we're watching with weed, right? With marijuana. I mean, I've told that story before of, you know, my dad would warn my brothers about the fellas on the junction that would be smoking weed. And my dad is gone, his brother is gone, his friends are gone, and the fellas who were smoking weed, they're still alive in their 80s.
Well, I'll be honest with you, that's why I was thinking back to, you know, the Rastafarians.
Yeah.
You know, that when we grew up in the Caribbean, they were marginalized. But now I think of them as having the knowledge. They live close to the earth. They eat from the ground. They don't get involved in the stress of hectic situations. They have very good nuclear families. And I think back and I say, they had the answer all along.
They sure did. And, you know, they are, and now you watch Big Pharma, the pharmaceutical companies now that are scrambling to make money off of the marijuana plant.
For sure. You know, for sure. My take on it, specifically marijuana, my take on it is, to be honest with you, I don't think anything inhaled is necessarily great. You can inhale paper, not cigarettes or marijuana, I'll still say, not a good idea. Okay?
Yeah.
But it has such great compounds in teas and tinctures and gummies and all these other things that could be beneficial.
Right. And you know, yeah. And the thing is, you know, we want a healthy nation that's functioning. And we want people to eat right, exercise, diet, and give back, find their purpose on life on this planet, right? And it's called healthy aging and healthy mind. So talk to us a little bit about the roadmap, the destiny that we have for healthy aging. And how, you know, we see some people in Japan living to be 105. We see people who are really listening to their bodies and doing what it takes to live longer. Just by doing what the land offers, you know?
Exactly. So speaking to that, I do have a lot of, I do different, like you can say different tracks regarding healthy immunity, healthy aging, healthy mind, healthy gut, etc. And at the end of the day, it all boils down to a common theme, to lifestyle. So I'm going to go over a few pillars that can help us today, because I do want to segue into immunity, because I think this season, especially with what we see going on in the news, it's concerning. But it will also tie into healthy aging. So when you think about pillar one, I want you to think of your nutrition. Think about your body and all the things that it needs to function well. You want to make sure that you get nutrition into your body. Nutrition boils down to molecules and chemicals at the end of the day, and they speak to your cells. So you want to give your cells compounds and things that it can understand. If you give your body a lot of processed chemicals, these dysregulate the body and cause inflammation, because your body is like, what is this? I do not understand what this corn syrup high process is. It'll understand corn, it'll understand basic, you know, nutrition, but when it's taken and translated and mixed and matched and becomes something that your body cannot translate, it moves into inflammation, it moves into aging, it moves into putting on fat into the abdomen, visceral adiposity, and those things. So I would say nutrition, I would say start with just eating healthy, real food. So I want you to eat the apple. I want you to, you know, you don't have to get the apple sauce. Just eat the apple if you can. I want you to eat the corn. You don't have to eat the high processed corn syrup. I want you to eat the vegetables. Eat the things from the ground. Eat nature. Eat natural things. And many foods are very anti-inflammatory and also anti-aging. At the end of your cells, you have the telomeres, which cap your cells. And if you age at a rapid rate, those telomeres unravel, and then your life just goes more quickly. So to keep those capped off, you want a lot of antioxidants and things that are high in those sorts of compounds. So look for foods which are very rich in colors. So I tend to say, eat 6 colors a day. Eat the oranges, eat the reds, eat the greens. All of these are found in foods, and they all have a role to play in anti-aging, anti-immunity, and all the other things that we want to benefit us.
Yeah, we're so fortunate to have you, Dr. Thomas. You're board certified in infectious disease, and you're also a lifestyle medicine. I mean, you're a medical expert when it comes to all these things. And I would love to see you post somewhere all over the United States. What exactly is the breakdown of food? Like you just explained it to us. People don't think about they chew, swallow, follow with a liquid, and it goes into their gut, and then it causes all these issues.
Sure, your gut, I mean, because the gut is key for, you have those junctions, and the gut is key for where you process food, where you absorb nutrition, and it goes into your cells. And if that is a breakdown there, you'll have a breakdown upstream. Your brain will have issues, your skin will have issues, you'll have issues with your immunity. So when I talk about nutrition, think about the foods as medicine. Garlic has allicin, it is antimicrobial. Ginger has anti-inflammatory compounds that support your mucosa particularly, which is great because the mucosa is what gives you that barrier between you and those viruses.
Yeah.
You want to have the citrus for your vitamin C, which supports your neutrophils and your lymphocytes, and these are your soldiers of your body.
Yeah, and so many people who have allergies, I swear, I started eating more oranges and things like that in the morning and tangerines and stuff. I actually take them to work, and I find that by consuming my vitamin C naturally, it does help my allergies, believe it or not.
For 100%, because yes, the thing about it is we can take supplements which are like pure things, like take vitamin C. But for example, you need other co-nutritional receptors and things to help you absorb those better. So for example, zinc. Zinc is great, but quercetin is actually a zinc ionophore. It makes little like separations in the cells so that zinc can be absorbed. You know what I mean? Like we know you want to take your D with your K. So whole foods have the combination that will be useful for benefiting you, because supplements on their own, a lot of people may need them. And I do recommend them, but they might have to be done in certain combinations to be effective.
Yeah,
you know, I also believe in garden to table. That's why I do grow my herbs, and my friends are starting my garden again, and they call me Farmer Kwama. That's my middle name, because I'm out there doing my garden, because I think it's best to have food immediately from the soil to your plate. You will really get that nutrition.
But it also helps your mind. It also helps your mind, body, and spirit when you're out there. Now, one of the ladies in the studio wanted you to talk about you know, people want to go on these cruises and you spend all this money to go on a cruise.
Sure.
But then you're watching what's happening with the ships that are coming ashore to different countries. And the doctors literally have to meet these people at the shoreline there and bring them in because this is it called the hantavirus?
Hantavirus.
Yeah, so talk to us about the threat.
Sure. So with hantavirus, that is particularly concerning for me because as infectious diseases, we know that there's a high mortality rate. Now, this virus, not trying to fearmonger, but I think we have to just be aware. With this situation with the cruise, we have people who came from all over the world with that exposure. The particular concern with that virus is because the Andy strain does have person-to-person transmission. And it may not need as prolonged contact as you may think. And so, with that being said, with patients who have gone, with the cruise persons who have gone around the world, the air stewardess, et cetera, it behooves us to be careful. This virus has a longer a longer time of convalescence, meaning that you may not present with symptoms until a couple of weeks in. And in the worst case scenarios, you will start to feel respiratory concerns, respiratory issues, which can proceed to ARDS, which is very life-threatening when your lungs do not transmit oxygen anymore. There's also situations where it can cause hemorrhage and kidney damage. So it's very concerning. I'm watching this closely. And I think that what I have done, I can tell you that, is I've ordered 95% alcohol. I've ordered some masks. I've ordered some things to be extra proactive to have them on hand. And that is why I think building our immunity now and being prepared for a threat, you know, if you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. Yeah. So that's why all of the things that we can do, which is building your immune system by healthy foods, by movement, 30 minutes a day of a walk will improve your immune system by 50%.
Yeah, but because if why aren't we, Dr. Thomas, with a 30 to 40% mortality rate, why aren't we hearing more about this? I mean, I don't mind hearing about stuff.
To be honest with you.
Yeah, it's crazy that they're not talking about it.
I'm surprised myself. Before logging on, I did go onto the CDC website just to see any updates. And they're just like, there's no threat to the United States right now. There's no people with symptoms. But to be honest with you, this could spread underground without any symptoms for weeks. The way things go is logarithmic. You have one infected the other, two infects four, four infects eight, eight, 16. And then you can go from there. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
And so, and each one that's infected can progress. So I think it's something, especially what we've learned from the recent pandemic, it's something I think we should have been very proactive about. And knowing that there were persons who were brought into the country, they were told to self-isolate, etc. But we don't know who they get exposed to in terms of who lives at home. And, you know, so I really feel that it could have been done a little, I would have said, with a bit more caution.
Yes.
And so for ourselves, what we need to do, I plan. That's why I got my alcohol. I'll be wiping down my laundry thing, my my carts when I go in the laundry. When I go to get groceries, I'm going on a plane and at the end of the week, and I'll be bringing my mask. That's what I plan to do, because circulating air. People going on cruises, I would say get fresh air. Get fresh air. You know, you have the buffets and so on. I would really want to have hot food prepared for me. You know, tableside. Things like that.
Yeah.
I would want to, you know, because it's really close quarters with the air circulating. Things like cruises and airplanes are very well known to transmit pathogens that way.
Yeah.
So yes, we have to live. Yes, we have to live our lives, and we cannot be, you know, become fearful, but we just have to be cautious. And so while I look to see what's going on, I personally won't be booking a cruise. I'll be looking through, seeing what's happening. Okay, I have my ear to the ground, because I remember with COVID, I came to the hospital I work at and I said, you know what, this is in China right now, but I'm concerned. We need to look into this. And they told me, you know what, this won't happen here. And if it does, we'll send them to a different hospital. And then only to find out months later, we were overrun with patients.
Oh, yeah. I still remember the day we had like 20 people in our and where I work with it. And we had to wear, you know, all the gear and all that. But the other thing about this Hatter virus, too, is what do we do about the rodents? Because you're saying that don't sweep up the rodents' waste.
Right. So the thing is, there are two. Yes. So there's different strains of the virus. The one that we're concerned about is the human-to-human, which is the Andes strain. But the more typical strain is from direct contact with rodents or their nesting materials. Any good contractor, anyone who deals with demo and so on, will tell you when they see mouse droppings, they immediately stop and they know these have to be taken in a very careful way. They will put their mask on and their protective gear, because those particles can become aerosolized. Meaning it can go into your airway and you get it down into your lungs. So certainly I say, if you do notice mouse droppings, you notice things like that around your home. I mean, there's not all rats and mice have this. They're particular ones. At the same time, you go camping, you're in garages, storage sheds, cabins, and all those things. You need to be a little more careful. Look out. Be careful. Be cautious.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going around dusty areas, put your mask on. Nothing wrong with that. You know, just to be proactive. Wash your hands after you've been exposed to dust and things like that.
And with all the building and stuff that's going around, a lot more of the wildlife are getting into
disrupted
and into our like living areas too.
Correct. That's true, Ellen.
That's correct.
So for our listeners, for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Dr. Aisha Thomas. She is an infectious disease specialist in Sebastian, Florida, graduated with honors in 2005, having more than, I guess, over 21 or 22 years of experience in infectious disease. And now you also wrote a book. So tell us really quick. We have a couple of minutes. I wish I could talk to you forever. Your book, your chapters in your book, their chapters are short, but they're beautifully written and so much information about healthy aging, a healthy mind, healthy hormones. I love the word healthy. Healthy sexuality, anti-inflammatory inflammatory stuff, overall health and wellness. These chapters is what we really need. And you're talking to us about our lifestyles and what we should do to make our life better. And you do all of this, Dr. Thomas, while knowing very well that everything you do is faith-based. You love the Lord and you love giving back. You have found your purpose as a human being on planet Earth through your Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, which, as I find, is absolutely beautiful.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And that's why I give all the glory. But I'll say this. I think that I want to boil down to this. I'm going to leave with this. You know what? No one's coming to save you. You know why that's good news? Because you have the power over your health. Okay? You have the decision-making and the power. So I want us to learn. I think knowledge is power. So if you can learn about our bodies and what we need, that would be best. And that's why the best things in life are free. You don't even need me. I will tell you nutrition. I will tell you fresh air, getting water, movement, sleep, social connections, avoiding risky substances. All of these things can help you overall to live a long and healthy life. So my book is available on the Libre Lifestyle .com, and I also have it on Instagram. And that is why I do like to post things that I do myself to try to inspire people. We exercise together, we eat well, we connect. And these are all the things we need to be able to live healthy and pass it on to further generations.
Yeah.
Because our children will see the way we live.
Did you just say we should socialize? Because I think I get an A in that one.
I think you do. And for healthy cooking.
So if someone was...
Absolutely.
So doctor, if someone was listening today and you want to give the takeaway you would tell them would be what? Tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends what your takeaway is and a little bit about where they can find more about the Libra lifestyle.
Yes, ma'am. So I think it boils down to this. It boils down to, as I said, knowledge and decision. Because knowing the information is one thing, because I have patients come in all the time and we have the discussion. Someone might come in with hypertension and I tell them, I recommend that you do less than 1 gram of salt. I recommend that you add a cup of leafy greens a day. These are literally prescriptions. And I recommend that you walk 30 minutes a day. Okay. These will decrease your blood pressure. I will say that to someone. However, the act of doing it is the onus is on them. And that is why I say the power is in your hands. I give the knowledge, you take the power and you run with it. And I've also seen the converse. I've seen patients come back who've had renal failure and obesity, and they follow those simple prescriptions of lifestyle. I call them prescriptions. Each of those things are prescriptions. The same way you can take your medications, you can do these lifestyle things. And you do the movement and the things that we recommend, and they come back. And the ladies dropped 30 pounds in 6 months. Surprised me. I really didn't expect to see it. But and also her partner did as well because she saw what she had done. And so I see that we are all like candles that can light each other. So that's why I say you can also impact your children. You can impact your friends, your family by the way you live and the things that you do.
Right. And stress. And you know, right now we're living in a time where we're so stressed out. I mean, I just had to go through the whole immigration spiel with my children, how I came here as an immigrant and I worked so hard and there's a lot of challenges and tribulations and I lived on one chicken for 10 meals and blah.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't think that today's generation, these entitled children that we gave birth to, understand the stress that we have in order to make it in America, you know?
Let me tell you, and bringing up stress, I'll tell you my key point, because I have been one that has gone through, as I mentioned in my chapter on healthy mind, I went through almost panic attacks. And what I learned to do is give it to someone greater. I can't make, like this Hunter virus happening and all those concerns, I can educate, I can learn, I can do all those things, but I will give my trust to divine guidance, because that is why I can give that troubles above, because stress is a killer. Stress is one of the most potent killers that causes inflammation, belly fat, visceral adiposity, memory loss, joint pains. It causes so much. And so if you boil down knowing that when you feel your body is going into fight or flight, you feel your heart rate going up, you feel feeling like you're just getting upset. And you feel that you have to go back to center. You have to take the deep breaths. You have to ground yourself. And you have to know there's only certain things you can control.
Right. Maybe things that's why, Dr. Thomas, maybe that's why the singer Cass and Marshall Montano are so nice and skinny, because they dance, they prance, they sing. These fellas have no stress. They bring a lot of joy to all of us, you know?
I will tell you that right now. Go out in nature. Go out, breathe the sunshine. Go on the beach. Meet friends. These are the things we are living for today for, not for just working 24/7, stressing out, and doing it again.
Okay, give us the website. Give us the website one more time, because Danny is putting his hand on his neck as though he's telling me a signal. Cut.
Oh, I see, Danny. Cut. So you will go to thelibrelifestyle.com. Libre Lifestyle. Freedom to live as well as you can. The Libre Lifestyle on Instagram, Facebook, and on the web.
Another fantastic episode here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Thank you so much, Dr. Thomas, for sharing all of those great insights of eating more from plants instead of things that were made in plants, right?
Colorful
is that
stuff.
How that goes? All the colorful things, right?
Thank you so much for
tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, everyone. And we will be here next week, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on 1510 WWBC.